So what questions do you guys have about homeopathy for animals before they get on?
I have a question, Christine.
Yep.
Could you speak about the relationship between remedies owners need and remedies animals need?
Absolutely. It wasn't one of my questions, but I will do that.
I would love that. Thank you.
Good. Thanks for prompting it. Basically, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's about all you can say. But just that sometimes it helps you when you're looking to notice one thing or the other. You know,
to notice.
Sometimes if the remedy is clear in the animal, it might help you find a remedy for the person.
Uh-huh.
And vice versa.
And what about seeing remedies that are related to each other in owner and animal? Do you see that often?
Like the owner would be pulsatilla and the animal would be silica?
Something like that, right.
Yeah, I don't think I pay any attention to that one.
Okay.
I don't think I've seen a pattern like the animals are always the acute of the owner's chronic.
Uh-huh. Do you see it more like sort of a miasm over the household? The energy is in the whole house?
Sometimes. Sometimes it's only one person and the animal. Sometimes it's just the animal.
I recently talked with someone who was describing a strange pattern of aggression in a dog, a female dog that's about 8. And I started to take the case, but I haven't finished yet. And my question is, how often do you see an older animal becoming aggressive related to hormone imbalance?
Why do you think it's hormone imbalance?
I don't know, but I thought that that's a possibility. It's very sporadic kind of things that happen with this dog. And
it's unlikely to be hormones in a spayed animal.
Okay.
It's much more likely to be related to vaccination.
Vaccination, right.
Especially aggression.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Christina. How are you?
Fine.
Good. Okay, yeah, let's have a few people say hello before we get started. Who's on the call?
Holly's here from Winnipeg, Canada.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Hi, good, thank you.
Good.
Lori from Hollywood, Florida.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Beth from Oakland, California.
Hey, Beth.
Hi. This is Susan from San Diego, California.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for joining us.
Patricia Marchetti from Plainfield, Connecticut.
This is Patricia from London, Canada.
Oh, hey, Patricia. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Good. So anybody else want to say hi before we get started, and I'll introduce Christina?
I'm Diane from Ottawa.
Oh, hey, Diane. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to go ahead and mute everyone out. In other words, you won't need to do anything on your own phones. I'll be able to essentially control letting the audience participate or not participate. And we're going to conduct this interview the way we normally do. I'll do a 45-minute interview, and then we'll open up the lines for participation from the general audience. So let me go ahead and mute everybody out. Christina, can you still hear me?
I can still hear you.
Okay, fantastic. Well, first of all, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I think this is the second call of yours, and we really appreciate you taking the time out to join us.
I love it. Would do this over a lot of things.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, let me just give you a quick introduction. For those of you who know Christina Chambreau, she's really one of the guiding lights that we have in veterinary homeopathy. She's on top of being just a wonderful person and somebody who I consider a very good friend, she's absolutely one of the most committed and passionate homeopathic educators that we have, and she's done so much to advance and promote veterinary homeopathy. So if you have a chance to, you know, study with her or read any of her written materials, by all means, you're going to really be exposed to one of the people who's contributing the most in the field right now. I know, Christina, that you're currently working on some projects. I thought perhaps you could just quickly let us know about what you're actually doing right now.
Yes. As many of you may know, the National Center for Homeopathy is not having their summer school this year, and I normally teach 3 classes with the summer school. So Tim Saffell and his wife, who run a rescue group in Bowie, Maryland, are hosting the entire animal part of the National Center for Homeopathy Summer School, and we've even expanded it. So we have 5 days, probably for most of you on this call. I suspect you're already familiar with using the repertory and using the Materia Medica and taking a case. And so the class you would be interested in would be the case studies. You bring cases of animals that you've treated, and we work through everybody's problem areas, like they're having trouble figuring potency, so we stop the case, whoever's presenting the case, when before she says what potency she gave, and then we all discuss, well, what potency would we give in this case? And then for those of you who are animal lovers and not doing much with homeopathy yet, the introduction to homeopathy gives a broad overview of the principles of homeopathy and the history, potencies, obstacles to cure like diet, vaccinations. Then the intermediate course is a really awesome, complete overview of how you would treat an animal with homeopathy. We spend a day doing case taking, a day learning how to look up animal symptoms in the repertory, and people leave really understanding the repertory and being able to use it. Then the next day is case analysis, selecting the remedy, reading about it in the Materia Medica, deciding what potency and frequency to give the remedy, and then finally the most important day is the evaluation of the response of the animal to the remedy. Then we're also doing behavior classes, one advanced the first week and one that's intermediate the second week, where people don't need any textbooks. It's on the Whole Health Now website under training. It's in June, so the dates are June 18th to July 1st. So you scroll down to the June calendar, and it's there for calendar of events and teleconferences in North America. The website to directly get more information is homeopathicanimalcare.org. So for now, that's the main thing. I'll talk
about
my book later as we go on.
Okay, fantastic. Is there a phone number that people can call as well that you'd like to give?
They can always call me. It's 410-771-4968.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, let me just start by, I know that in the past when we've spoken about, you know, veterinary homeopathy versus human homeopathy, you've mentioned to me that sometimes you have a different opinion about how animals should be treated using homeopathic remedies. So I was curious, what is your pet peeve about how you see animals being treated using homeopathic remedies these days?
Well, you know, Kim, it's probably the same pet peeve that most good homeopaths have about people being treated with homeopathy. Too often, I'm going to make two different statements here. One is, there are people who have an animal and their animal is not responding to conventional medicine and they've really never heard about homeopathy, and they go into a health food store or a holistic pet store and they see a remedy for the problem their animal has that's a combination remedy or maybe a single remedy that just, you know, they happen to look at Nux Vomica and their animal has digestive problems. And they give these combination remedies and their animal gets better. That's fine. These are people who don't know anything about homeopathy, and that's a place for combination remedies. Hopefully, at that point, they'll get interested and learn some more. But my peeve is with people who know something about homeopathy. They've read some books, they've been to some classes, and they persist, and I see this on listservs that are dedicated to homeopathy for animals. They persist on, my dog has anal gland problems, what remedy should I give for that? And then somebody responds and says, oh, silica is really good for glands that are stuck and plugged up. Or my dog has tartar on its teeth. Well, Dr. McLeod says to give Fragaria for that, so I recommend Fragaria. Or they'll mention combinations. My dog has incontinence, and they'll say, well, use the homeopath remedy for incontinence. That's my pet peeve. What I don't like is people who know something and know better who aren't taking the case. The most important thing in homeopathy, in my perspective, well, there are two, I think, equally important. One is taking an awesomely great case and being sure you write it down. The second is evaluating the response according to the organon. and Herring's suggested, whether you call it a Herring's law or not.
Sure.
But the basic principles, so the taking the case and evaluating the response, those are the key part. Learning what is it that's going on. We have an energy imbalance. We're not giving a remedy that's going to stay in there and fix the problem. We're giving a remedy to fix the energetic imbalance that's present so that this problem will never come back again. That's our goal. And so I want people really paying attention. It doesn't matter if you give the wrong remedy. It really doesn't matter if, because of where you are and what's available, you give a combination remedy. If you've taken the case carefully and you're carefully evaluating the response. Because maybe you'll start with a combination remedy for back pain while you're figuring out the remedy, and then you order Hypericum or Nux Vomica or whatever fits, Pulsatilla or whatever fits the case of this paralyzed dachshund. So I don't get so upset about what people give. My upset is when they're not realizing what they're doing. Make sense, Kim?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and I really agree with you about, you know, especially not being concerned about giving a wrong remedy, but really understanding the reaction to the remedies that you give. I've always felt that really is the art of homeopathy, is not whether you give a correct or an incorrect remedy, but understanding what the reaction to it is and then what to do about it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, yeah, I'm totally on the same page with you. You know, one of the things, Christine, that I've heard from a lot of veterinarian homeopaths is that they use combination remedies because they claim that they can't find the quote-unquote constitutional remedy or the primary chronic remedy for the animal. What is your opinion about this?
First, I have to admit that it is very difficult sometimes to find the chronic remedy. Animals are reflective of where people will be 50 years from now if we don't start turning things around. If we keep eating McDonald's and we keep being vaccinated for more and more things, if we get Lyme vaccine and we get flu vaccine every year and we start getting measles when we're older because the original measles didn't hold, if we persist in drinking aspartame and eating chemicals and having mercury injected into us and put on our teeth and, you know, every person is susceptible to different things, but most of us at some point are susceptible to this onslaught. We've been doing it much more for animals, and they have a shorter lifespan. So what were the struggles that veterinarians have now in finding the similimum is just an early warning for everybody else. Our cases are suppressed very often. They don't have clear-cut symptoms. They're frequently one-sided cases. They come in with ear problems, and that's it. Or they come in with an aggression problem and absolutely no physical problems going on, because everything that ever showed its head was suppressed before we even got any modalities or characteristic symptoms. So I can appreciate how difficult it is to treat an animal and to find the deepest underlying remedy that's needed at that time. Therefore, some people do find they go for shortcuts instead. Or they try one remedy, two remedies, three remedies. The animal is not getting any better, and then they go to a combination remedy. I don't see any need for doing that. There are always other ways you can palliate gently the animal while you're searching for the best remedy, whether it's the curative remedy or the best remedy that will move them, start moving them towards the cure. There's things like Reiki that can help for the pain, energy treatments. Herbs can be used that are not suppressive. When you have bad skin, you can give a bath and do oatmeal baths and rescue remedy and a wide range of topical treatments that can soothe the animal. Therefore, I think it's better to look for those soothing applications as opposed to using combination remedies. Even the one time I sometimes have seen when people have done their best, maybe they've gone to two or three good homeopathic veterinarians, and they haven't made any progress, and they are unwilling for financial reasons or something else to go find the best remedy. I have seen some remedies in old animals with a lot of pathology. I've seen some combination remedies make the animal more comfortable in the year, in the months or years they have left. I've also seen, and Kim and I were talking about this earlier, that sometimes when there's a lot of pathology, rather than using just a single remedy, you may need to alternate remedies or use remedies in close succession or cycle through three or four remedies at one time.
Sure.
So that can be done too.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when you're in advanced stages of pathology, the general rules and principles of homeopathy bend a little bit in terms of, like, how quickly we can give remedies. And, you know, I've certainly seen that myself. And, you've seen that.
Actually, Kim, that's a good point, because I think that a large number of our animals are in advanced stages of pathology. Even before we're seeing so much. Even before they're clinically diagnosed with hyperthyroidism.
Sure.
Their thyroid may already be fairly shot.
Sure. Very interesting. So, you know, I know we've talked about this in the past, but I'm just, and you've mentioned some of these on the call this evening, but, I'm assuming there's some people on the call tonight who probably are mostly working with humans and not with animals, and I thought it might be interesting for you to just give us a quick rundown on what are some of the really more difficult or more challenging obstacles for really getting a good cure in the animal population.
I'm realizing that maybe the most challenging obstacle is the people the animals live with.
And the animals tell you this directly when they come in.
Right, yep. Pretty soon I'll be able to talk directly to them. That's one of my goals. I've been watching recently Caesar Millan, the dog whisperer, on the National Geographic Channel.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
I highly recommend that any person with a dog who isn't just the perfectly most wonderful mannered dog in the world watch this before they ever prescribe a remedy for a behavior problem. It turns out he is treating super successfully in 10 minutes, in 15 minutes, behavior problems that I would have attributed to vital force imbalance.
And very interesting. And where do you see this? Where can you watch this?
National Geographic Channel.
Okay.
It's called The Dog Whisperer is the name of the show.
Okay, great.
And there is, I don't have it handy, but there's a website and stuff like that as well. And he's very much addressing how the person is what's causing the animal's problem.
Huh.
And remember, with people, we always have to look at what is it, and Hahnemann talks about this, you know, is it living in a damp basement that's continuing the problem?
Sure.
We can't cure it with remedies if a damp basement is the cause. We can't cure a dog's aggression, timidness, biting, inability to go for a walk, not wanting to, growling over food bowls, growling over possessions, separation anxiety, if we don't address how the people are interacting with the animals. So it's a whole new area. Now, physically, there are a couple of just real basic things. As with people, the best diet is a fresh food diet.
You mean raw food?
Well, right. I'm saying, and with animals, most people think, well, I'm doing great if I feed a processed, canned, or dry food that has good ingredients. You're not even on the scale.
Sure.
You need to be feeding fresh food. And not all animals will transition over to it. That means they're ill if they're having trouble. You need remedies to get them healthy enough to eat better food. If an animal is not critically ill, I ask them to change the food for at least a month before I really take the case. Particularly in aggression problems, I find that diet can make a huge difference, and of course in a number of physical problems. Many animals are susceptible to vaccinations and or to the adjuvants that are in the vaccinations, whether it's the disease, the killed virus or bacteria, or if it's the adjuvant, I'm not sure. As in people, it seems to be, for instance, the mercury more than maybe the vaccine itself that's caused such problems with children and autism. But with animals, we've over-vaccinated them. Animals do not need vaccines every year, just like people do not need vaccines every year. If you feel you need to, give a distemper and a parvo to the puppies. Give rabies to stay legal unless you're bold enough to work around that. And remember that if you're forced at some point to give a vaccination and your animal is healthy, don't panic. Your mental state can affect how the animal responds. Do something general when you have to give a vaccine, like Reiki or increased vitamin C or intuitive healing, Barbara Brennan healing. Do not do homeopathic remedies after giving a vaccine any more than you would give a homeopathic remedy for a problem. So don't give Thuja, don't give Listen, don't give Leadum, don't give Hypericum, don't give, I don't know, what else is for injections. Don't give a nosode made from the vaccination or a nosode made from the disease after the vaccine in the attempt to prevent problems. Wait and see what happens, and then give the homeopathic remedy that matches the symptoms that appear after the vaccination. And those are the main, oh, and then environmental. Keep your house clean. Don't use toxic chemicals in your house. Don't use toxic chemicals on the yard. Don't use Frontline Advantage or anything. You have to wear gloves in order to put it onto your animal. Carefully consider if you want to do heartworm prevention or not. It doesn't seem to cause a lot of problems in dogs, but be careful about how you give it. Give it as little as possible. Those are the main ones.
Sounds like very practical and very useful information, very useful advice. You know, I have a cat myself, and one of the things, I've been wanting to feed her raw food, and I just thought maybe you could give us some specifics about that, because I know at least in my area there isn't any place to buy raw meat, and I'm always worried about going to a market. Do you have suggestions on where people can buy the best type of raw animal food for dogs and cats?
I'm amazed, Kim, that where you live, there's nobody raising free-range chicken.
Well, I'm sure there are, actually. I would probably have to seek it out.
Yes. So,
so that's what you're suggesting, basically. If I just,
yes. So what
they'll slaughter these things for you? Or,
well,
I'm just saying, is there a company that's actually doing this and providing?
Yeah. Yeah, there are two approaches. One is to do the work yourself. That's called do the research. Go to the Department of Agriculture for the state that you're in. I just discovered a wonderful website for the Carolinas. It's sustainable, something like Sustainable Agriculture in the Carolinas. And so go to the websites, find the local places, and then you get a whole chicken and you cut it up. The other alternative is to go on the Internet again, and there are now an ever-increasing number of companies that are making a raw food diet for you, and you get it shipped to you frozen or buy it from a store locally frozen, and you just thaw it and dump it. Most of these, the one drawback of them is they are a pureed mixture, and you do want your animals to be ripping and tearing at bones and meat and skin at least part of the time. But you could use this in combination with some fresh food. Remember that wild game is wonderful. It's pretty much, and there's often people you know who hunt and don't want the meat, so you can get wild game meat is fine. The different companies carry different quality. Like Bravo Company has one that is made from market meat, one that is made from organic meat, one that is made from free-range organic meat. And, of course, you'll pay more and more as you go up to the free range.
What's that, Bravo, B-R-A-V-O?
B-R-A-V-O.
Okay.
But there are many others. Aunt Jenny's uses organic. Aunt J-E-N-N-I-S, I think. There's a number out there. The Whole Dog Journal, and even for those of you with cats, it'd be worth going online to Whole Dog Journal and checking the issues on foods, because the companies they're reviewing and saying are good for dogs with the raw foods will be the same ones carrying it for cats. Cats and dogs get fed the same food, raw foods, just cats need 60 to 90% meat, dogs need 40 to 70 or 80% raw meat. You will find thousands of opinions, just like there's thousands of opinions for people. Use your common sense. Think. Don't be swayed by the opinions of people. Dogs and cats have ripping and tearing teeth, bone-crunching teeth, a small muscular stomach, and a short digestive tract. So they need raw meat, raw bones, and pureed vegetables, and they don't need much, if any, in the way of grains. And they need a wide variety, just like people. So habit makes common sense to you.
Very good. Sounds very, very good. So, Christina, getting back to homeopathy,
yes.
And specifically talking about potencies, you know, I know certainly for the human practitioners, there's quite a bit of discussion about which posology methodology we should be using, whether it's fourth, fifth, or sixth edition, whether we should be using single dose weight method of the fourth edition or LMs. What is your opinion in, with regard to animals? What have you found to be most useful?
Personally, I have found it depends on the individual animal for me. I tend, because of I was trained 25 years ago, I tend to use single-dose C potencies, unless I'm doing 6C or 12C, and then I'll use, they're still sort of single-dose. Even when you're repeating a 6C once a day or twice a day or three times a day, before you give the next dose, stop and do a very brief evaluation of the result. Because sometimes a single dose of a 6C in a weak animal will last for a week or two. The push to the vital force will continue to respond. Before you give the next dose, think, do I need to give this at this time? So in general, I do single dose. I did learn about LMs, and I find LMs to be very effective when I have animals that are particularly sensitive, when there's a lot of pathology, when the owner needs to be doing something all the time. And that's about when I use it. There are veterinary homeopaths. Anthony Krawitz in Florida is probably the best. He has written an excellent and spoke at the AVH, Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy.
Last name again, Christina?
Krawitz, K-R-A-W-I-T-Z.
Okay.
He did a whole talk, I think 2 years ago, on LM potencies. It was excellent.
I actually was there. That was a very excellent presentation, I remember.
Yes, was that the Seattle one?
Yes, Seattle. I think that was what it was, Seattle, but I remember it was very, very good.
Yeah. Yes. So for anybody who wants to learn more about LMs and in animals, that would be the article to get.
I know.
Animals take them easily. I don't. People also give remedies. This is another discussion with people. People will also give remedies in water. And I personally haven't seen any difference whether they're given dry, single doses given dry or given in water. I do it just for convenience. I also, just as a by the way, feel it's fine to give the remedies in any dairy product, like milk, cream cheese, cottage cheese, if it's difficult to give it to the animal. I just have never found those to interfere. Go ahead, Kim.
And the animals enjoy the remedies more that way, I guess, too.
Well, I prefer giving them straight or in water because then I trust the animal's intuition in
mm-hmm.
many cases. And if you want to record after you've given the remedy how the animal responded, did the animal not want to take the remedy and you had to force it, or did the animal really come to you as you were getting the remedy out and want it and ask for it? But if it's difficult to give, then giving it in the milk or cream cheese is okay.
You know, I've noticed on some of the books on treating animals that they have these very unusual potency suggestions. What's the story with that?
Well, I think people, when they're writing a book, are just thinking about their most recent cases. The author who's the worst about this is George McLeod. And in one page, on one page, say treating tracheobronchitis or kennel cough in dogs, he will say give Drosera, and I'm doing this from memory so I don't remember, Drosera 30C, give Spongia 6C three times a day, give Phosphorus 200C once a day for 5 days. Now, none of that makes any sense at all. I encourage people to totally ignore anything if it's related to a disease or to a remedy and speaks posology, because posology is related to the individual animal and I totally recommend following Hahnemann's recommendation on posology.
And what about, you know, you've given the animal a remedy. I mean, in humans, it's hard enough to know if they're responding. What's the most important things to look for to really know for sure that the animal is responding to the remedy you've given?
Well, actually, the most important thing is that you took a good case to start with, and especially quantified the symptoms. This is much more important. It's important in people, but it's more important in animals because you aren't going to be getting as much subjectiveness. You want to know how often are they coughing, how long are they coughing, for how long a period of time are they itching during the day, what time are they waking up at night to itch, how big is the growth, measure it, compare it to something like a grape or a peach, what shade of pink is the skin, what shade of pink and how big are the red lines on the gum, what is the color of the discharge and how sticky is it and how... would it fill a teaspoon or would it fill the tip of your little finger? Be creative in how you quantify. Quantify everything you possibly can. That's the most important thing. Then second is you want to focus on their energy level and their emotions and their interaction with people or other animals. That's where you're going... It's true in people. You want the person to feel better in spite of having symptoms that are residual. With animals, you will see often an immediate turnaround in behavior and energy level, sometimes within minutes of giving the remedy. And that doesn't mean you're looking at palliation or suppression. It's an initial primary response that shows that you have a remedy. It may not be curative, but it's a close remedy. You're in the ballpark. That you get this immediate response, and it means you have an animal that's responsive. One of the other key areas is sort of an unusual one, particularly animals with skin problems or hair coat problems that have a dull hair coat. Within 24 hours, when you've given the correct remedy, sometimes shorter even, the people will say, the hair coat's all better. It's a glowing hair coat now. What I think is happening in these cases is it's the aura that's improved, the energetic. You're seeing the energy field of the animal. It's not that if you took the hairs and looked at them under the microscope, they couldn't have changed in 24 hours. So there's something else going on, but that's another characteristic to look for is there just sort of this glow to their coat? Is there a gleam to their eyes? Those are some of the clues in addition to specifically tracking the symptoms. And the reason people over the years have said, Dr. Chambreau, please write a book. And as you see, I'm very middle of the road. I don't think you should only use LMs. I don't think you should only feed raw meat. I don't think you should only never vaccinate ever. What's important to me is that you take a good case and you evaluate the response. And that's why I wrote my book, The Healthy Animals Journal, which is available at the Whole Health Now website. And I encourage it makes it easy to track the symptoms so that in the future, as you're evaluating the response, it makes it easier. You have a list of symptoms. They're quantified. You're also paying attention and recording the positive, wonderful things that the animal is doing. Because what you focus on is what you get. And this is something for those of you that are treating people and also in your own homeopathic process, we often, as homeopaths, tend to focus too much on what's wrong. And then how is that changing? Is the bad symptom getting better or worse? We also need to focus on what's right in your life. And I encourage people to use a pretty colored pen writing in the journal to write the fun, wonderful things. If you have a very old cat in renal failure that's not moving very much and is throwing up and not eating, and you give a remedy, what I try to get when I'm taking the case is that also this cat is lifting her head when the owner comes in. This cat is purring when the owner is petting it. And therefore, in the follow-up, you want to be following those positive things as well.
Very interesting. You know, I love what you said, Christine, about the glow of the coat of the animal, because, you know, I've seen exactly that same thing with a patient, and sometimes you think it's an illusion, or because how could it be? You know, sometimes you've given the patient the remedy, and they almost immediately look like their energy field is better, or there's a glow around them, and you can't quite describe it, but you can even kind of see it like on videos, like a lot of times on the videos in the homeopathic symposium, the before and afters, they just almost don't look like the same person. So I know exactly what you're talking about. It's this wonderful thing about homeopathy that happens.
It is. It's awesome.
So listen, when the patient comes in, do you spend a lot of time evaluating their health at that time at the beginning intake? And have you found that there's certain symptoms that are indicators of them being more or less healthy?
I spend no more time on the present than I do on the past. I would say with animals, most of the time, unless it's an acute, really ill animal, I spend much more time historically and recent historical than I do with the animal at the moment, because an animal who's scratching and has red bumps and scratches until it bleeds and scratches till it's raw and has a hot spot that's oozing a yellow-colored, honey-like, sticky substance and has an odor to the skin, you will not ever find the curative homeopathic remedy or even a palliative homeopathic remedy from those symptoms. It just won't happen. It's too much of an external disease at that point. And you need to know what caused it, what are the modalities, what was it like when
sure.
it started. And too many of the animals who come to me for treatment, it's getting better. Many times people are coming now at the very beginning before they're ill. But too many have already been treated with drugs over their lifetime. And so the symptoms currently are often very blunted, or they've been treated with combination remedies, and so the current symptoms are blunted and not clear and not characteristic. When I see, I love it when an animal comes in that has a skin problem, and it's had the skin problem for 5 years, and they've been doing all these drugs, even prednisone, and you have this bouncing, happy, energetic, playful animal with a skin problem, because I can then tell the owner, you're lucky. And they go, why? I have to give a bath every 3 days. Well, would you rather have a dog with skin problems that you have to bathe every 3 days, or a dog that's in liver failure or having major stomach ulcers? And they go, oh, yeah. So the understanding of the principles of homeopathy really help people put up with the long-term treatment that it takes often to cure a skin problem, reminding them over and over again that this is a healthy energy field that withstood all the suppressive treatment and keeps pushing the symptoms to rebalance itself to the outside. And that's why it's so important, any listservs that any of you are on, remember to express the homeopathic principles to people as they're grappling with trying to treat the symptoms. I look for vaccination reactions, not immediate, but ever since the vaccine or every year at a certain time. Oh, when were the vaccines given? So I always ask about that. I try to get the diet to change first so I can see how much of it is diet related. I'm now going to start having them watch Cesar Millan's behavior tapes for any animal behavior, for dog behavior problems. And there's a woman, Deborah Wood, W-O-O-D, who's written several books, The Tao, T-A-O, of Bow Wow, and The Tao of Cats or Kittens, and multiple variations of those books.
The Tao of Bow Wow, is that what you said?
Yes, The Tao of Bow Wow by Deborah Wood. They're excellent, and I recommend those as well. So characteristic symptoms is what you want to look for. You want to look for how the animals are interacting with the family, and it's very important, if you are not making progress with an animal, to interview other people in the household. Often I do encourage reporting from different people, because one will think they're limping more, one will think they're limping less. And then you figure that it really hasn't changed.
Great. So, Christina, are there any cases or any diseases that you find that you have not been able to treat using homeopathy?
No. I would say there's individual animals that I've not been successful with, that I've referred to other homeopaths who I think are better than I am, who they've not been able to cure that individual animal, and maybe it's gone on to have its symptoms at least alleviated through conventional medicine or herbal medicine, or it's gone on to have acupuncture, maybe. Rarely cure it in those cases, but at least long-term alleviate the symptoms. We have to be careful when you're using homeopathy because some people insist that they just do the homeopathy and don't do anything else. We find this in people where some homeopaths say, don't have your teeth worked on, and people's teeth are falling out while they're trying to get a deep cure. That's not right. So in animals, there are times where you need to go get drugs. You need to give, I have a little dog I'm working with right now who just had some teeth pulled, and the owner has me probably preventing a cure in this dog in the long run. In the deep sense, I've treated the dog for years, and so have three other homeopaths. And this dog is frantic. He's pawing at his mouth continually. And we've been to the regular vet. We've done homeopathic remedies, and they aren't sleeping. So I said, give valerian last night, and the dog slept all night. So there's certainly times I'll use Rimadyl in a case like that if I need to for short time. But in terms of any one specific thing be untreatable, I haven't found, unless it's a like a cleft palate in a dog might respond to homeopathy and it might not, but the management of it would be too difficult, would be very difficult. So there's some congenital problems that while they may respond, you may not have the time or the ability to caretake for the animal while you're treating the congenital problem and having it respond. But Dr. Levy has documentation of a septal defect in the heart, a hole in the heart between the two ventricles closing up with homeopathy.
Oh.
And another one I have trouble sometimes is bladder stones do not always go away with homeopathy. And Hahnemann in The Organon even talks about bladder stones needing to be removed.
Sure.
Another one is fatty tumors. Old age fatty tumors in dogs are not that big of a health problem, and I think it's a way of the body walling off the toxins, pushing it to the outside and walling it off. So I often find that those don't respond. Cancer in any end-stage case can be difficult to treat. But pretty much I would always try. I will never say, nope, we can't treat that.
That's great. That's great. So you said you've been in cancer, you're getting your – what kind of success have you seen?
Personally am not treating cancer very much because
yeah.
I travel so much
yeah.
that I don't take on cancer cases because they need really careful management.
Sure, sure.
I would say – it really doesn't seem to matter whether you get it early or whether you get it later. What matters is if there's any characteristic symptoms about the animal. I have some animals that just pop with cancer at 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 years of age with hardly any other history. And those are harder to treat. When you have animals where they've had specific illnesses throughout their life and then get cancer, and you can look back and really see the remedies that had been needed during the lifetime, those animals often respond wonderfully to homeopathic treatment. So it is more, is there still something characteristic to prescribe on or historically to prescribe on? Then you have more success.
Fantastic. Well, listen, I see we're getting short on my part of the interview, so
yep.
Let me just ask you one final question, which is, I know some of the people on the call have expressed to us a desire to be able to find good practitioners or how would they locate a homeopathic veterinarian practitioner. Could you give us some information about that?
Yep, there are two ways.
Okay.
Three ways. Talk to other homeopaths is one, and the second is to go to the website for the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy, which is www.theavh.org. So that's T-H-E-A-V-H www.ashmedicine.org. And there's a list there, and you can simply pick them. If they're certified, they've really gone through some significant testing. But again, different, just because they're a member of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy does not mean they're doing classical homeopathy. Just because they're a member doesn't mean they're going to be successful treating your animal. They may miss something and someone else could do it better. You still need to work with the practitioner and you be in charge of evaluating the response. The third way is to go to the veterinary advice line, and the number for that is 8664-VET-NOW, V-E-T-N-O-W, and the website is vetadviceline.com. And a holistic practitioner will talk with you, and we place people into chiropractic and acupuncture and as well as homeopathy, so you would need to say, I want a homeopathic practitioner. And we'll listen to what's wrong with your animal and where you live and find you one in your backyard or find you one that you can work with by telephone. And in that case, it's a more personalized, this is how this practitioner works, this is what their quirks are. And on that website is a good article I wrote about selecting a holistic veterinarian and working with a holistic veterinarian. So it just gives you some clues to do that. And then, of course, studying at the, you know, doing any sort of studying, you're going to meet people and talk with them about who they use and who they work with.
Fantastic. Christina, could you just reiterate, because there may have been some people who joined us a little bit late for the call, and I wanted to be sure that everybody knew about the course that you're going to be offering this summer.
Yes, that's going to be in near Washington, D.C., and it will be from June 18th to July 1st, and there are multiple classes that are being held, advanced, intermediate, introduction, and behavior courses. And the way to find out about them is homeopathicanimalcare.org. Or call me, 410-771-4968. But the website has much more info than I do about the courses.
Okay.
All I can tell you is the content. I don't know how much it costs. I don't know the hours. Somebody will call me the day before and say, show up here, and I'll go, okay.
Well, Christina, thank you again for a wonderful call. Just so much really useful information, and I'm sure that people took away quite a bit from it. I'm going to go ahead and unmute the lines now and let everybody else have an opportunity to ask questions, so hold on one moment. Hi, is anybody there would like to ask a question of Dr. Christina Chambreau?
Yeah, I'd like to ask if she has any vaccine protocols to replace some of the vaccinations.
Well, the bottom line is just to know that you don't, number one, from a truly homeopathic perspective, you would need to give no vaccines at all.
No, no, but for instance, in children, I have a protocol for 60 months with children.
Right.
To replace,
yep.
I shouldn't say vaccine, I should say disease prevention.
Right. It depends on what people want. From a truly homeopathic perspective, you could do no vaccines at all, work with the energy field, keep them healthy, and treat whatever comes down, you know, anytime they get infected and do get a disease, you can pretty successfully treat it. Then I have minimal ones, giving just distemper and parvo to dogs and giving panleukopenia to cats, and that's it, and rabies. Again, the rabies is legally required, and if you can keep the animal healthy, I feel it's better to go ahead and give the rabies and just try to work around it. But if there is ill health, then you get an exemption for the rabies. But just those initial shots, either once at like 12 weeks and 16 weeks or just a single dose at 12 weeks, I would split them up. I'd do distemper at one time and parvo at another time. And that's about it. They don't need any more the rest of their life. And cats, one or two doses of panleukopenia, the cat distemper, and that's it for them.
Okay, any other questions?
Christina, I'm in South Texas, and our dogs and cats are inundated with big, fat fleas. It's overwhelming because we live on a farm.
The first thing I would say to you is that your animals may not be as healthy as you think they are, because I have many clients in Florida, Texas, Louisiana, and their animals outside all the time, and they do not have any fleas. Fleas are a pretty good indication of the health of the animal. I occasionally will find that to be not true. An animal I feel is totally healthy who has a few fleas, or has a lot of fleas. Very rarely. Generally, you get them completely healthy by finding their constitutional remedy, feeding a great diet, not vaccinating, and they won't have fleas. Now, also, you actually could institute something that not everybody can do. The best flea eradicator and tick eradicator is to have guinea hens and chickens wherever the dogs are. And then there's a whole lot of holistic, although not homeopathic, treatments for fleas. And if you go to my it's not there yet. If you email me at healthyanimals@aol.com, I have a flea report, a vaccination report, a nutrition report, several others, for $5. So you can email me about those. Also, if any of you would like to be getting my monthly Healthy Animal Update newsletter, you can email me or sign up at my website, ChristinaChambreau.com. So either ChristinaChambreau.com or HealthyAnimals@AOL.com. So there's tons to do for fleas, flower essences, garlic, all of that.
Great. Another question?
I started to ask you, Dr. Chambreau, as we started about I had just halfway taken a case with a dog that has this sporadic aggression, and then I didn't finish it because I felt it was more important to talk to the owners about constitutional prescribing versus fixing symptoms, and the rest of the time went to that explanation. But so I'll continue with this animal, but the animal is on Prozac, and the people are really not happy about it being on Prozac. And how do you feel the success, or how do you measure success if they are on a medication like that?
Usually the medication is just addressing one problem, and therefore when you take the case, you always have more than one thing to work with.
Right.
And it's often not totally, usually the medicines aren't totally helping the problem, or they wouldn't be coming to us. The first thing, again, as I said, I would have them watch the dog whisperer. Before you even start with treating aggression. I would have them do a month of working with watching that and find somebody in your area that does that kind of work, because it was pretty awesome. And because it may not be vital force imbalance that is causing the aggression. So your talk with them about finding the deepest possible remedy that matches what's going on now as well as in the past is good. I applaud that. And that would be the route to go. You give the remedy along with keep giving the Prozac.
Right.
You give the remedy, and then you just track the symptoms. Usually what happens is the effect, as they get more healthy, you start seeing the side effects of the drug, and then you can wean them off the drug.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And Prozac, every case I've had, I've just taken them straight off the Prozac, but that may not always be appropriate.
Right. Right. Okay.
Great.
Good.
Another question?
Oh, and just another comment about your fleas. I know I don't vaccinate my animals, and I live in Florida, and I really have not had a problem with fleas with them at all.
Right, and your neighbors probably do.
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, I haven't had any neighbors talk, but, you know, everybody that I talk to has their animal on all that garbage.
Right. Sure.
You know, the front line or the...
Right. Yeah, you definitely don't want to do
every
that.
Pill on the market. So the dog winds up with all kinds of horrible things. Much worse than fleas.
Mm.
Okay. Another question?
Dr. Chambo, what about treating larger animals, the horses and the cattle? How different is that from the cats and the dogs?
Oh, very good. Absolutely not at all. Just like the dogs and cats are not different from treating people... The horses, cows, rabbits, birds, guinea pigs, chickens, every individual, it just is sometimes harder to find characteristic symptoms. Horses, you can usually find characteristic symptoms because they're you're interacting with the horse on an individual basis. Cows are often more in a herd situation, so you frequently have to treat the herd problem. You do it like a genus epidemicus, and you treat the entire herd for the problem. And then those cows that are not sick, are not responding to that remedy, then you take their case and find the remedy that works for them. And then the few cows that are left, you treat on a more individual basis and struggle a little bit more with those. But if you have individual cows with individual problems, you're still looking, you're always still looking for the deepest possible remedy. Now, we don't usually talk about curing cows and curing goats in terms of they've got a list of symptoms and we give the remedy and they go back and we see a return of old symptoms. But what we do find is often we'll find the similimum. Edgar Schaefer was called out to do a this cow is going to be slaughtered, a pre-kill exam, and it was a Friday night, so he couldn't really do it till Monday morning. And the cow was down in the back, and he gave it phosphorus 10M and never heard back from the farm until 6 months later he was out there. This cow turned out to be their best producer, totally recovered from her illness. She lived 8 years and produced more milk than anybody else. So that's a true cure. So you approach it exactly the same way. It's just because of their shortened lifespan, you tend maybe not to get the same cures that you would in other animals. But you move them towards a cure by looking for the deepest acting remedy that matches all the symptoms.
And the dog is asking questions.
Yes, I like it.
Did you understand that, Christina?
No, I haven't learned to communicate yet. Judith Reichenberg.
Okay, so
Ullman
I'm sorry.
Well,
we'll have to hold off on the dog's question. Does one of the humans on the call have a question?
Yes, I'm wondering if you can treat an ACL injury, a tear, with homeopathic treatment, or do you recommend surgery at that point?
I always recommend starting with homeopathy. Even the conventional surgeons say that if you're using glucosamine chondroitin sulfates, you have up to 3 months before you need to do the surgery before there's significant possibility of arthritic changes. And that's just saying what the conventional people are saying. I've had very good success in treating ACLs, even when they're completely torn. I guess they're not completely torn, maybe, but they seem to be completely torn. And they respond very well. Again, I've had other individuals I've treated didn't work, and they did go to surgery, and then we treat them afterwards. And as with cancer or with any other one-sided type problem, success usually depends on what other characteristic symptoms, history, and etiology you have. Luxating patella, same thing. I actually frequently find that the one remedy that's listed in Kent's repertory for luxating patella is gelsimium, and I have frequently had that be successful. And the animals that need it often have some other characteristics of gelsimium who have come to me with luxating patellas.
Okay, I think we should have time for one last question.
When you find that the animals are the maintaining cause of, or the owners are the maintaining cause of the animal's illness, and the state of the owner is so extreme that they're not able to, say, do something like the dog whisperer would recommend, and the remedy is not holding because of the state of the owner, is there anything that you as a homeopath can do there and then to work in that situation?
Well, that one sounds pretty dire, actually. At that point, I really work at getting the owner under homeopathic treatment or something else. I mean, they may not, if they're coming to you for homeopathy, they're probably interested in homeopathy, but they may feel better working with somebody who does flower essences or an intuitive healer. I've had cases in that instance. There's a woman who wrote a book called Ears of the Angels, I think, Dina Spear, S-P-E-A-R, and she does tuning, musical tuning of people and animals. And you can, sometimes it will affect the whole, you'll suggest that they get her to work for the animal, and it will help the people as well. So sometimes you can come at it from a different approach if you find your homeopathy is not holding. Because, or you repeat it, and sometimes you just have to say this is the lot the animal chose. So you don't always have control. Just like with infants. I'm sure you guys who are doing pediatrics run into that same thing, right, Kim?
Absolutely. No question about it.
How do you deal with that when you have an infant?
It's sometimes very challenging, especially when the parents aren't open to really changing. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You just have to shrug your shoulders and
quite
say,
difficult. Yeah.
I've done the best I can.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, listen, Christina, let me have everybody give you a big thank you. It was a wonderful call, full of just incredibly useful and practical information. So I learned a lot, and I want to personally thank you. Can everybody give Christina a big thank you for...
Thank you so much.
Great program. Thank you.
Good. Glad you enjoyed it.
Bye, Christina.
Bye-bye, Kim. Thank you.